Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 399 of the Box Hard Podcast. Next week's episode will be episode 400. How crazy is that? Anyways, I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, the pride of Pittsburgh, PA, the pride of this podcast is, of course, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
You're the class of the podcast. I guess I'm the pride, I guess. That can work. But yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good this week. How about you? How you feeling?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. Always the same. Let's dive straight into the review part of the show. Only two cards to go over. We're going to really whiz through this part. We're going to start here with this one. It took place on Thursday, the 1st of June, a week ago today. We saw Eric Bazinyan move to win number 30, a unanimous decision over 10 against Jose De Jesus Macias, now 28-12 with four draws. It was for the NABF and NABA super middleweight titles, a 10-round unanimous decision there for Bazinyan. That's what I expected, to be honest with you. Also on the card as well, Steve Claggett, 35-7 with two draws. A TKO for him in just round three against Alberto Machado, now 23-4. It was never going to go the distance, that one there. Machado, like I say, he can hit or be hit. That's pretty much how it goes. He either knocks you out or gets knocked out. It was for the vacant NABF super lightweight title. All the best there to Steve Claggett. Congrats on the win. And then, yeah, moving to the final card to mention, it took place at the Little Caesars Arena in Detroit, Michigan, USA. It was live on DAZN. I watched it. Clarissa Shields, now 14-0, a unanimous decision over 10 two-minute rounds, a successful defense of all of her belts, ranging from the IBF to the WBA to the WBC to the WBO and also the WBF, just for a laugh. But yeah, she was able to beat Maricela Cornejo, now 16-6. Cornejo given, I think, about 9 days' notice for the fight. I don't want to go in too much here. Obviously, Clarissa, friend of the show. I've not really got too many bad words to say about the way she fights. I think she's a phenomenal talent, really, in the ring. But, you know, she is probably, I don't know, pound for pound number one, pound for pound number two. Certainly one of the best females in the sport, for sure. There's no question. But she's just obviously not blessed with the power. And the fact that she's gone in with Cornejo, obviously, wasn't an ideal situation. She was supposed to fight Hannah Gabriels, and Cornejo stepped in. Gabriels obviously failed a ped test. And, Shields, I think, even the fact that she's not much of a puncher, I think she probably should have really got the stoppage. You know, a pound-for-pound best fighter in the sport should probably be stopping someone who's only had 9 days' notice for the fight. I know Cornejo's tough, but I think, you know, Clarissa Shields probably, as good as she is, should have probably got the stoppage. Even though she's not the biggest puncher, I think she should have been able to put the foot on the gas and get a stoppage. But yeah, credit to Cornejo for sticking in there. She probably lost every single round through the 10. And yeah, you know, Clarissa Shields, though, I think she did quite well with the ticket sales and stuff, so that's a good thing. But once again, I think she's running out of dance partners. You know, it's not that interesting to the casual fan. You know, obviously it was a homecoming back in Detroit, back in Michigan. I say a homecoming, she's from Flint, obviously, but, you know, back in Michigan, back home state, you know, obviously a lot of people showed out for her, but that fight there, I don't think would have been close to selling out if it was anywhere apart from Michigan. Not obviously many fights out there for her. That's why I think, you know, she she's either going to get back in with Hannah Gabriels. It wasn't really a close fight, but she got dropped. Or she's going to get back in with Savannah Marshall. There's not really many fights for her. It's just an unfortunate thing. But there is one girl coming through right now, actually, called Shadeja Green, who I think is about 13-0 with 12 KOs. People are talking about that fight. It's between two... obviously black American females. I think that is a really, really good fight down the line. But anyways, let's leave it there. Hopefully it happens. But yeah, that's it though for the review part of the show. The final thing for me to do in this part is to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the reigning IBF female super bantamweight world champion. It is, of course, Miss Shanika Johnson. Shanika, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, it's my pleasure. So, Shanika, first things first, obviously, welcome on the show. It's an honor to have you on. Just, if you can, give our listeners a little backstory, just briefly, into your journey of obviously becoming a fighter. Where did your love and your passion for boxing begin, if you can tell us?
To be honest, my love for boxing came from just boxing. I think I was in, like, grade 8 in high school, and I went to a local boxing class. And the trainer there, Philip Holliday, he's an ex-world champion himself, he just said, you got a bit of natural talent. And I was always a bit of a tomboy growing up, and my dad pushed me into the boxing ring, and I had my first fight, and I actually loved it. So I think from there, that's where that love for boxing, the training, it came from just fitness.
And you've been a pro now for just over 7 years. Obviously, your record stands at 15-1. You became world champion back in April of last year, so just over a year ago. Talk to me about that night, Shanika. How it felt to become a champion of the world, obviously beating Melissa Esquivel by majority decision. Obviously, Melissa has lost previously by split to Erica Cruz just in the fight before that. Just tell me about that, because Australian boxing is on fire for the women right now. I've been saying it for a while.
That fight night was pretty incredible. You know, it was a dream of mine to become a world champion, and that night I reached those goals, and I was, you know, and knew the words. So that was really exciting. A big milestone for my career, and I just feel like that's just the start of Shanika Johnson.
And your first title defence was obviously your last fight, October 16th in Melbourne. Now, one thing I didn't actually know until after the fight was that your younger brother, Levi, had been tragically murdered just weeks before your fight. I can only imagine how difficult a time that must have been for you and for you to have still gone ahead with the fight. Obviously, it's still extremely fresh, but what can you tell us about your mindset and, obviously the tragedy itself?
That was a huge downer on me and my family when we had heard the news. And I really was for a good 4 or 5 days thinking, okay, am I going to be able to successfully get through the rest of this camp? How am I going to mentally be able to prepare? But I feel like I just you know, spoke to myself and was just like, he would want me to still do this. This is something that he would want. So I dedicated the rest of that fight camp to him, and I knew that he was with me there in the corner. My family were really supportive about that, but at the same time, I was trying to be there to support them. We're only a small family, so I wanted to be able to give as much love to them as I could, as well as concentrating on the rest of my fight camp.
And that's amazing, actually. It's a wonderful thing that you were able to kind of, I guess, use it as a little bit of fuel. I can't imagine, like I say, what you'd have been thinking, what you'd have been going through. But you showed true professionalism. And I did watch that fight. We should touch on that just briefly. An excellent fight. A unanimous decision over 10 against the vastly experienced, super tough Susie Ramadan. Not to mention that cut you sustained in that fight. For me, has to be the worst cut I've ever seen in women's boxing. I've seen people shot in the head with less of a wound. Just tell me how you got through that fight. And yeah, like I say, the heart you showed was insane.
I feel like, you know, I didn't see the cut at first, but I could feel the blood running down my face and I could feel like my eyes filling up, and I actually couldn't see at one point because it was just like, wow, how can I get this out of my eye? And she actually looked at me with like a really worried look on her face. It was like, oh, you're bleeding. And I'm thinking to myself, like, we're fighting, who cares, you know? But then when I got back to the corner and my cut man Craig jumped in, I was like, oh, okay, must be pretty serious here. And then I seen like my white top was pretty much red. So I feel like just because I'm cut, I'm not giving up here.
Yeah, like I say, the fight itself was really exciting while it lasted, and that cut was just shocking, actually. Shout out to your cut man, actually, did an amazing job. But yeah, that brings me on to
your
next
incredible
fight.
He saved it. He honestly saved the fight, Craig did. He's incredible.
Shout out to Craig. I agree. That was unbelievable, the job he did. But yeah, like I said, that brings us into your next fight. It goes down this weekend at the Wembley Arena in London. You'll be defending your title against the UK's Ellie Scotney. Tell me what you know about Ellie, Shanika.
To be honest, I had never heard of her before she challenged me. But then again, I feel like I'm a little bit sometimes in my own bubble and concentrate on what I'm doing and don't really venture out into, I guess, stalking other people and things like that. So once she was on my radar and her name was mentioned, we did a little bit of study on her. Like, she had a strong amateur background. She looks sharp. She looks quick. She's not going to be an easy fight, but I just feel like they aren't prepared for, I guess, the full potential that I have. Like, Melissa's fight and then the fight with Susie, that wasn't the best of me, and I'm yet to bring out the best of me. So I'm really excited to showcase that against a younger, sharper, upcoming fighter and to take my belt home here over in the UK, coming to a background. Like, I'm going out of my comfort zone because I'm confident in my ability that I'll still take my belt home.
And one thing is for sure, she hasn't boxed anyone near your level just yet. Over here, very interesting to me was that you're about a 4-1 underdog, which I think is absolutely crazy. I mean, the fact that this fight as well was originally to take place on that Taylor Cameron undercard, I did want to just mention. I've kind of thrown two questions into one here. But yeah, did that disrupt training camp in any way for you?
It put a little bit of a downer vibes on it because I was really looking forward to being on such an incredible women's fight card over in Ireland on Paddy Taylor's homecoming. But at the same time, you can't like pick and choose. Obviously, being the fighter, you sort of just got the cards that you're given. And at the end of the day, it probably worked out best because I've had a longer camp, more time to grow as a fighter, and just, you know, like, this has honestly been the best camp that I could possibly have physically, mentally, emotionally. Like, I'm in a really good place at the moment.
It's great to hear that. And like I say, I'm really looking forward to the fight. I wanted to ask you as well, Shanika, you said that sometimes you're in your own little bubble. You don't really concentrate on, you know, many other fighters. I wanted to ask if you do have, though, a favourite female fighter out there right now, or maybe a couple of favourites, if any.
I do really admire Katie Taylor, even though, considering her recent loss, like, she's just been an incredible role model for the sport and women's boxing in general. Like, just hats off to her. She's an absolute incredible fighter. She's definitely up there with one of my favorites. And also Amanda Serrano. She's tough, you know. She's got a really strong style, which I like, and I look up to her. I'm like, okay, even though she's a southpaw, I just like her as a fighter.
Yeah, no, I really enjoy watching Amanda Serrano. I think she's excellent. And also, I wanted to ask again, I know you've got a fight coming this weekend, and maybe the worst time to ask this, but is there any females out there that you would like to box in the perhaps not too distant future, or is it just all focus on Ellie?
At the moment, I try not to look too far ahead of what's in front of me. So, you know, once we get over Ellie, then we'll look into what's next. Like, I don't want to go too far ahead because there's a job to be done first.
Absolutely, absolutely. Smart answer. And I wanted to ask as well, Shanika, obviously you've been here a couple of days now. In fact, I'm not entirely sure how long you have been here, but how have you been treated since arriving in the UK? What have you made of the country so far?
I've been here since Sunday, and the first day we arrived, the sun was shining, so I was wrapped. I was so happy. I love it when the sun's out. And then the last 3 days has been a bit cloudy and overcast, so it was like really vibes. Today's the sun's out, so I'm happy again. But other than that, the UK is, it's sort of similar to Melbourne, to be honest. So I'm adapting really well to the time zone. Like, I'm pretty good at staying on top of those, like, little minor 1% of things. Like, all of those things count come fight night, like sleep routine and things like that. So other than that, like, the UK has been good. Been doing a few media days with Metron, which I'm heading out to very shortly for the first time meeting Ellie and official face-off. So they've been pretty good.
Excellent, excellent to hear. And yeah, like I say, quite honestly, I was
I did request when coming here, I did want a fridge, and we've had to source our own fridge because for some reason we couldn't get a fridge. That could be my only complaint about it.
Well, at least you got it in the end. That is good to know, though. Okay, so at least you got the fridge, thank God. I was going to say, I was really, really impressed with your victory over Ramadan. And, you know, I think a lot of people over here haven't really seen you fight before. Maybe a lot of people are overlooking you. I personally think if Ellie is overlooking you, it'll be a huge mistake on her part, because I know how good you are. I wanted to ask if you had a prediction on this fight, Shanika, or are you not really one to make predictions?
I'm not really one to make predictions, but I sort of have a game plan. Like, I've got a game plan in my head, and me and my team have a game plan, and I think if we can pull that off, we're definitely going to disrupt her fight plan as of what we've seen previously. And I just feel like I'm not going to be the fighter that she's expecting, and I'm going to be more than the other fighters that she's previously fought.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like I say, I think there's a hell of a lot to your game. It's not just textbook. It's not just predictable. Like I say, I saw a lot in your last fight, and you'd have fought even better if you didn't have that huge gash on your forehead as well. Coming down to the last couple questions that I have for you now, Shanika, I wanted to ask this one here. I like to ask this question to everyone that we speak to from overseas. If you have one, favorite UK fighter, who springs to mind? It can be any era, if you like. If you have one, let us know.
Can I say Katie Taylor?
Yeah, I mean, I'll let you have that. Obviously, she's Irish. She's Irish, but I'll let you have that. I'll let you have that. She is obviously
okay. Thank you. Yep.
Yeah, she's a pioneer of women's boxing, and yeah, I'll let you get away with that one. It's a good shout. Just finally, Shanika, before we let you go, if you've got any closing words just to the listeners, anyone that will listen to this from all over the world, if you just want to sign out with a closing message before we let you go, say whatever you like, my friend.
I just wanted to say thank you for all the love and support and positive comments. If the negative ones, great, but Sugar Neeks on Saturday, and still, thank you all.
There we go. Well said. Listen, Shanika, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for your time, and I'll be pulling for you to get the job done from ringside on Saturday night.
Thank you very much.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. Just one piece of news to mention. Top Rank have announced that the Emmanuel Navarrete Oscar Valdez junior lightweight world title showdown will be going down. Obviously it's been rescheduled. The pair had, you know, a fight each, and yeah, it's going down August the 12th at the Desert Diamond Arena, live on ESPN. I'm not entirely sure that they've got an undercard for that just yet, but anyway, it's a It's definitely going to be an action fight between those two Mexicans, that's for sure. But anyway, that is it though for the news. Moving on now to the preview part of the show. We're going to start here with a card that takes place tomorrow at the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, Lancashire, United Kingdom. Friend of the show, former WBC flyweight world champion Charlie Edwards. He's 17-1. He returns to the ring. Not entirely sure how many rounds the fight is because it doesn't yet say he's got an opponent, but it's scheduled at bantamweight. Can't really wait to see him back, you know, because he's been extremely, extremely inactive. And obviously, we're going to get to it, but Charlie Edwards fighting on the Friday, Sonny Edwards fighting on the Saturday. Yeah, you know, obviously Charlie, good friend of mine. I've actually got a pair of his shorts that he boxed in that he gave to me, which was really kind, a few years ago. So, yeah, got those there with my treasured possessions of boxing memorabilia. And, yeah, it's just going to be great to see him back because he hasn't boxed in over a year and he's actually only done 2 rounds in almost 3 years. So he's been extremely inactive and I just wish him the best, really, in, you know, in his kind of comeback, I guess. Like I say, no opponent just yet. Moving now, though, to the York Hall in Bethnal Green, London. This also goes down tomorrow. It's going to be live, I'm sure, on BT Sport. Let's start with the undercard. A few fights to mention. I'm not actually going to mention the opponents here, but I'm going to fly through it. We're going to see Tommy Fletcher. He's out again. Joshua Frankham, Royston Barney Smith, Carl Fowle, Ben Fowle, Ezra Taylor. A good fight here between Henry Turner, 10-0. He defends his WBC International Silver Super Lightweight title over 10 rounds against the very tough Tom Farrell, who is 21-6 currently. Tom Farrell, if people remember, gave a really good fight to Harlem Eubank in his last fight. He actually had Harlem in a bit of trouble, but he's not a bad fighter, Tom Farrell. I don't think he's ever been stopped either, so I'd say that one probably goes the distance, but I wouldn't count him out. I think there's some smart money on an upset there for Tom Farrell. There's a few little bets that I like the look of actually this weekend. Elsewhere on that card, we're going to see Mark Chamberlain, 12-0. He gets in with Marvin Demolari, who is 12-4. It's for the IBF European lightweight title as well. I do think it's worth a small little punt on Mark Chamberlain just to win on points. I think it's about 4-1 for that to happen. I just think it's worth a punt. He's 12-0 with 8 KOs. This guy here, like I say, 12-4, but never been stopped. So it's just, I think, worth a punt there. It's over 10 rounds. And yeah, the main event, David Adelaide, 11-0. It's for the WBO European heavyweight title. He gets in with Emir Amatovic, who's 12-1. His one loss, he suffered a stoppage loss in round 3 to... Oh, what's that heavyweight? Oh, dear. The heavyweight that... Filip Hrgović, that's who he lost to. It was a third round TKO there. Anyway, that's it for York Hall. Moving now to the Olympia in Liverpool, Merseyside over here. Just one fight to mention. It's a Dennis Hobson show. It's for the super flyweight vacant Commonwealth title. We're going to see former European champ Ryan Farag, 21-4. I remember being ringside when he boxed Sonny Edwards. Sonny put in a really good performance there. But anyway, Ryan Farag has been extremely inactive as well. He's boxed only 2 rounds in almost 4 years. He gets in with Marcel Braithwaite, who's 14-3 with a draw. Never actually recorded a stoppage, never been stopped. This has really got points written all over it. Probably for Braithwaite, just because I think he's done a lot more in the timeout that Farag has had. I don't really think Farag is going to be in his prime anymore at all. He's a few years removed from it, I'd say. And he must be getting up there in age now, Ryan Farag. 35 years of age. Yeah, Marcel Braithwaite, I'd expect him to win. But yeah, I think probably even on points, that's probably the bet. But I wouldn't be surprised if he did actually get a late stoppage just because it's a 12-rounder. And Farag, like I say, has done 2 rounds in almost 4 years. And yeah, you've got to go back to 2016 to the last time he did 12 rounds. That's it for that one there. All the best to both men. Moving now to the Commerce Casino in California. This one's going to be on USA UFC Fight Pass. Just one fight to mention. We've got Callum Walsh. He's 6-0 with 5 KOs. He's an Irish fighter prospect. He gets in with the very teak-tough Carson Jones. 43-15 with 3 draws. It's for the WBC USA Silver Super Welterweight title, like I say. Again, Carson Jones about a 9-1 underdog, and not very often do we see him in with a guy that's just 6-0. So I think he's worth a punt at 9-1. And also Callum Walsh to win on points, you can get more than double your money there. So I'd cover both bases there. I think that's quite a decent little two bets there. Moving now to this one, it goes down at the Casino Miami JLI in Miami, Florida, USA. It's a Don King Promotions card, baby. I know you love that, Eddie. On this card, we're going to see Guillermo Rigondo, 21-3. It's a 10-rounder here at bantamweight. The last I heard was that Guillermo Rigondo, I'm pretty sure, like a pressure cooker blew up in his face, and they were saying that he was like blinded, and I hadn't heard any update on that. I don't think I'd heard any updates on that. I'm pretty sure it was Rigondo that supposedly happened to, and that was the rumor, but here he is, he's back. Obviously not really the fighter that I think he was from years ago. He's 1-2 in his last three fights. His return win was back in February this year, a first round knockout against Jesus Martinez. But he gets in with a guy who's 12-0, undefeated with 5 KOs, Charlie Clemente Andino. Never heard of him. He's a flyweight though, and he actually hasn't had a fight for 7 years. It's almost like the kind of inactivity that you're coping with, Eddie. So I'm not sure what we're going to see there. That's a bit of a weird one. I'm actually shocked. That's the first time I've heard of that. And in the main event, I am going to come to you, Eddie. I'm not guessing you're going to know too much about the opponent, but it's all about the main man in the main event, the problem, Mr. Adrian Broner. Is he taking it serious this time? 34-4 with a draw. He gets in with Bill Hutchinson, 20-2 with 4 draws. Never been stopped. It's a 10-rounder here at welterweight. Eddie, can Adrian be a problem, or is it too late?
Honestly, I think Adrian's his biggest problem. I think with the success that he had, because he had so much success early in his career and so much fame being right next to Floyd, and then wanting to be Floyd, wanting to be that. He honestly wanted to be Floyd before he was even Adrian Broner. You understand what I'm saying? He wanted to be the best, before he even found himself. And I understand everybody wants to be the best. Everybody wants to be the GOAT. Everybody wants to be, about billions if you could. But, the reality of it is we're not all going to reach that point. But to do the best you possibly can with what you have and not try to be someone that is above you or even trying to be someone else in general. Because you never know how far he could have gone. He has the talent and the ability to be whatever he wants. You know what I mean? He could be so much better than he is. But it's just hard sometimes for guys like that to come down from the high that they've been on. And that's when you'll see guys like, I love Roy Jones, man. He's one of my favorite all time to watch. James Toney, too. These guys have a hard time retiring when it's clearly been time for them to retire. They can't get out of the limelight. And I think with Adrian Broner, his moment, he needs to be in the gym, focusing. He don't need to be talking. He needs to watch what he says. He needs to rein himself in. He needs to grow up. Stop trying to be so, controversial. And don't worry about the controversy. Worry about fighting. And I think a lot of times these guys get out of the mindset of worrying about getting in that ring and being successful because they got so much confidence. They just believe no matter what, they're going to get in that ring on that night and the game is over. I'm winning. And it's not always going to be like that. So you're going to have to respect the game, respect your trainers, you respect the fighters you're fighting, and you'll be successful. Especially when you got talent like his. I think he's, as much as you want to call him an underachiever, I'm pretty sure he hasn't had the best life before this. So, him getting into boxing probably saved his life. But he has been, with the ability he has underachieved. He was supposed to be one of the best in boxing and fell short of that when he was close to getting it. And I think it all stems from his mentality and what he thinks he is versus what he actually is. And he has to go back to the drawing board and really get himself, like I said, rein himself in, start focusing on training, focus on more what's going on inside the ring than what the hell's going on outside. And I guarantee you, he will be so much better. He is older. He's starting to, there's effects of it, the drinking, the partying, all of the crazy shit he's done. is going to catch up, but I'm hoping for his sake that it's going to take more time for that to happen, and that he has, still has time to right the wrongs that he had going on within his career.
Well, all the best to him. Yeah, you know, he is another guy. It just seems like there's so much inactivity. Lots of guys coming back from a lot of inactivity this weekend. Adrian Broner hasn't boxed in over 2 years. It's been 2 years and 4 months. He controversially beat Giovanni Santiago, and then he was also at that point coming off 2 years out the ring since he'd boxed Manny Pacquiao. So yeah, he's done 12 rounds in 4.5 years, and that was just in one fight there. But anyway, moving on, let's move now to this one. It goes down, it's massively gone underneath the radar, actually. It's going down at the Casino Buenos Aires in Buenos Aires, Argentina, over here. Heavyweight, the undefeated Ivan Daiko, 12-0. It's for the vacant WBA Federcaribe heavyweight title. I'm not entirely sure how he's managed to wind up fighting for that belt, because as far as I was aware, he was 100% Kazakhstani. But anyway, here he goes. He gets in here with former opponent of Dave Allen, Ariel Bracamonte, who a lot of people will remember, 12-10, a bit of a tough guy. So yeah, that's gone under the radar there. I haven't heard anyone talking about that. Ivan Daiko, yeah, he's been out of the ring for a year as well. Moving now to this one, it goes down at the Wembley Arena. It's going to be live on DAZN on Saturday. Let's start with the undercard. Friend of the show, Shannon Ryan, 4-0. She's in an 8-2-minute round contest against Martina Bernil, who's 5-1 with a draw. The Romford Bull, Johnny Fisher, 8-0. He gets in with Emilio Salas, who's 7-4 with a draw. That's over 8 rounds there. Obviously not expecting it to go 8. Johnny Fisher, 8-0 with 7 KOs. This guy, Salas, he's been knocked out in 3 of his 4 losses, including his last fight, was banged out in 2 rounds. He's also been banged out in 2 rounds by Colby Madison. And yeah, he lost to Keith Tapia back in 2012 on his debut. He's been another one. Like, he's been a pro for over 10 years, been a pro for over 11 years, and he's only had 12 fights. It's really strange. He's a southpaw, 6'4", 38 years of age, residing at the moment in Yonkers, New York. Yeah, Johnny Fisher, I expect to get through him quite quickly, probably within 4 rounds. Also on the card, I think this would be quite interesting. Yusuf Kamari, 15-1 with a draw. Good fighter, think he's a good boxer. You know, he's got the fundamentals now down quite good. He gets in, though, with Reese Bellotti, 15-5, who, again, is a real, real big puncher. Reese Bellotti coming off just over a year out again. I remember being ringside when Yusuf Kamari lost his O to Jorge Castaneda back in October 21. So, yeah, he's come back since then with 2 wins against low-level guys. But, again, I think Reese Bellotti to get the win, or I'm not sure if it's get the win or get the knockout, is about 7-1. I think that's worth a small punt there. There's a lot of good big prices, I think, on underdogs this week. Moving up the card once again, friend of the show, Nina Hughes, 5-0. She's in a 10 2-minute round contest, obviously defending her world title. She is the reigning WBA World Bantamweight Champion. She gets in with the undefeated 6-0 Katie Healy, who again is stepping in on short notice because Shannon Courtney pulled out of the fight. All the best, of course, to Nina Hughes. I'd expect her to win that one relatively easily, to be honest with you. Wouldn't be surprised with a late stoppage, but I would lean more towards points. We've got Siobhan Clarke as well, 5-0 with 4 KOs. I remember his last fight, he boxed against Israel Dufus, and a lot of people thought that he would be stopping Dufus, really, and obviously was quite disappointing that he went the distance with him. Well, anyway, he's back here. He gets in with David Jamieson, who's 10-2, but his 2 losses both came to the same man, that man being Mikel Lawau. He lost to him in the first fight, a unanimous decision over 3 rounds. It was like a prize fighter type of fight, and then they had the rematch. I remember watching it. It was quite a good fight, actually. But they pulled him out with a broken jaw in round 8. So that's the 2 losses. But other than that, he's quite a tough guy. Quite a tough guy. Can take a good shot. And I'm expecting Siobhan Clarke to win this one, of course. But I wouldn't be surprised if it actually went 10 rounds. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a unanimous decision for Clarke here. Moving up the card once again, we spoke to her a few moments ago. Shanika Johnson, 15-1. She defends her IBF World Super Bantamweight title over 10 twos against Ellie Scotney. She finally gets her chance, 6-0. Ellie Scotney, a massive favourite. Like I say, I think Shanika has a big chance here. And like I say, I think the bookies have overlooked her. She's a 4-1 underdog, and she's even bigger than that to win on points, which is what I think could happen. I don't think she's going to stop Scotney. I don't think Scotney's going to stop her. I think it goes the distance, this fight here. That's perhaps a bet to get on. Not entirely sure what the odds are on that. Probably not great. But yeah, I think Shanika Johnson is way better than the odds would suggest. And I was really impressed, like I said during the interview, with her fight against Susie Q. I think she was extremely good that fight, especially coping with the cut that she sustained. I think it's a tough test here for Ellie Scotney, who's boxed nowhere near this level and hasn't impressed me in all of her just six fights at all. And yeah, moving up the card to the main event, Sonny Edwards, friend of the show, defending his IBF World Flyweight title. Three world title fights on this card here. But anyway, he's 19-0. He gets in with the little-known Andres Campos, 15-0, with 4 KOs from Chile. A lot of people were saying he's a little Mexican. He's not actually Mexican. He's from Chile. But yeah, you look through his record, and again, it's just littered with not great records. You know, the guys that he's beaten, they don't have great records. It's kind of come from nowhere. But again, it doesn't necessarily mean he's not a bad fighter, or not a good fighter, I should say. You know, you don't quite know what you're going to get. I think he's very much an unknown quantity. People were looking into a little bit of pad work he did in the week. People were saying, oh, he looks quite good on those pads, actually. Looks a little bit sharper than maybe most people thought he'd be. Looked like he could whack a little bit harder than perhaps people were expecting just on the pads, but we can't read into that too much. But what we did see, a lot of people were like, oh, this looks a bit tricky. Looked like his feet were in sync with his hands. So could have his work cut out here, Sonny Edwards. But again, you'd still have to favour him massively. Moving now, though, to this one. It goes down at the Toyota Arena in Ontario, California, USA over here. I'm assuming it's on DAZN. It's an Oscar De La Hoya show. Going to start with the undercard. Just one fight to mention. We always like watching him, Eddie. I won't come to you for any comments. But Shane Mosley Jr., 19-4 in a 10-rounder here against Demetrius Ballard, who is 21-1 with a draw. Like I say, I really feel like Shane Mosley Jr. has grown on me. You know, he's become better and better and better. I remember watching him early on. I didn't think he was that great, but slowly but surely he's been beating, you know, better fighters and stepping up the competition, and certainly he has improved. However, I wouldn't be surprised if he lost this one. He gets in with, like I say, Demetrius Ballard, who has only got the one loss, which was in his very last fight to Jaime Munguia. He was knocked out in just 3 rounds. But other than that, he had a decent, you know, decent resume, beating some decent fighters. So I think this one's going to be quite a close fight. I think you can just about triple your money on Ballard to cause the upset. So again, that I think is worth a small little punt. And then the main event, I am going to come to you, Eddie. Jaime Munguia, 41-0 these days. It's a 12-rounder. Still not that interested in boxing for a world title since moving up to, I was going to say up to middleweight, but it appears that this fight's a super middleweight. That seems a bit mad. Or is that not mad? Maybe he was at super middleweight all along. I know he was champion at 154. I know he boxed Gabe Rosado. That was at 160. Oh, it looks like he has moved up to 168. He gets in with Sergei Derevianchenko, 14-4. Always in a great, great fight. You know, he's mixed it with the best of them. Danny Jacobs, Gennady Golovkin, Jamal Charlo, Carlos Adames, amongst others. He's lost, I think, all of those ones there, but they've all been on points. Very, very tough guy. He gets in with Munguia. 168, I'd probably say, favours Derevianchenko, and it's definitely a last chance saloon for him, but always in a good fight, Eddie. And Munguia has slowly but surely been kind of changing his style into more of a boxer. I think he suddenly realised, whoa, I can't just carry on with this face-forward style, otherwise I might not make it to 50-0. I'm going to have to start boxing a bit smarter, and we saw that a lot against Gabe Rosado.
Yeah. I mean, for so long, he's got so many fights, you know what I mean? Like, you were, like, wondering when, you know what I mean? Now, don't get me wrong, he's fought some guys, I mean, a couple of guys, but not... would you expect somebody with that many fights and that much experience and, you know, touted to be that good to actually go and you know, fight someone or try to get a title, or at least, you know, make plans to do so. And it just doesn't seem like that happened. However, in this one with Derevyanchenko, he's a guy, like you said, he makes that. I think now this kind of fight is like the fight, let me test my guy. You know, his people are doing, let me test him and see where he is in a way that he's going to fight this guy who's basically, this should be his last chance, and most would think it was his last chance. Even though he's an exciting fighter, most people are not going to read too much into this if he loses to Munguia as well. So it's like, at this point, he has to win. If he beats Munguia, then he's back. So this is a great test for Jaime Munguia right now. This is going to be the kind of challenge he needs. Then from here, there's no question he should be looking at trying to get a world title fight. You know what I mean? And turn his career, now turn himself into, you know, one of the major players. I mean, we've been talking about it for a while. And, you know, as a good fighter, a good up-and-coming fighter, it's about time for him to now become more than just a contender, at least a championship-level contender. And I think, you know, waiting, and I understand the waiting. You know what I mean? Guys turn pro early, which I'm not sure if he did. I think he did. But guys turn pro early, and they get a lot of fights, and they get a lot of experience over that time. That's a good idea. There's nothing wrong with that. Even myself, I've had that because I turned pro at 18. But at some point, you have to start fighting guys. You have to start getting the respect of your. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying you don't get the respect of his peers, but even more so, get the respect, get more respect, and be prepared to actually now, you know, do something with his career other than just continue to fight. Because you'll see guys, like I've seen a few different guys that I've seen over the years never really step up and fight anymore. You know what I mean? They'll be 45-0 with no names on their record. And it just, to me, it just doesn't make sense. Why get in there? And I guess it's not a major risk when you're, you know, just going in there fighting a bunch of guys that you should knock out or beat. But you never know. You might get that one and you get in there with him and he's a lot tougher than his record says. So it's about that time for him to get in there and show what he's capable of if he's able to do it against this guy, Derevyanchenko, because he's very, very tough. He's experienced. And if you're not prepared, if you're not a real guy, you're not going to be able to deal with him. So, yeah, we're going to get a good chance to see what Munguia can do and whether he's ready, seriously ready for a title shot.
Yeah, Munguia obviously put together such a inflated record at one point. When he become world champion, I remember him getting in there with Saddam Ali and obviously stopping him. And then, yeah, since then he boxed Liam Smith, Brandon Cook, Takeshi Inoue, Dennis Hogan, Patrick Alote, Gary Spike O'Sullivan, Turiano Johnson, Camille Serrameta, Gabe Rosado, Demetrius Ballard, Jimmy Kelly, Gonzalo Correa. All of these guys, I mean, they're not, I think Liam Smith's probably the best opponent he's boxed, I'd say. I would give a mention as well, maybe to, no, I wouldn't actually give a mention to anyone else. It's been such a weird run. It's like he become a champion, moved up, didn't, you know, he could have done what the WBO do. They allow you to go straight in for a mandatory shot. He decided, no, I want to extend the wins and, you know, settle in comfortably to middleweight. And now it appears that he's gone to super middle. So it doesn't make much sense, really. And I actually will say this categorically. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a really, really, really hard fight. Because I would say, depending on what Derevyanchenko has left, he is 37 years of age now and he turned pro late. But depending on what he has left, this could be a really, really tough fight. You know, his four losses that I mentioned, he was down in round one against Danny Jacobs, got up and managed to lose by a split decision over 12. The next loss is when he boxed Gennady Golovkin. He was down in the first round, got up and lost again super narrowly by just 1 point on one card and by 3 points on the other two cards. That 10-8 round in the first round almost cost him in both both fights there against Jacobs and Golovkin, being knocked down in the first round in both fights. He had the loss as well to Jamal Charlo. That, again, was a really close fight. He started to close the fight really well. He started to dominate Jamal Charlo in the late rounds, but he let the early rounds slide away. And then, obviously, his most recent loss was to Carlos Adames. That was a majority decision loss as well. So he has given everyone a good fight, and I just think it depends on what he has left. This should really be one of Munguia's toughest tests, and even though he's 41-0 and he perhaps hasn't had the best opposition against him to amount to that many wins, they are still fights, and he has spent a lot of his career taking a lot of punishment. And if he just walks through Derevianchenko, it's a massive statement. I can't see that happening at all. I think this has got potential to be a really, really exciting fight with a lot of momentum swings. And to be honest with you, the more I think about it, the more I think Derevianchenko's got a big, big chance in this fight, actually. I'd like to look at the odds, but again, I wouldn't go heavy because, you know, I think Munguia still has a little bit left, you know, enough to win this fight, I'd say. And like I say, in his recent few performances, he seems to be adapting into more of a boxer with longevity on his mind for the first time ever. What else do we have? That's that card there. Moving now to the final card to mention. It goes down again at the MSG New York, USA over here. It's going to be live on, I'm assuming, ESPN, and it's going to be on Sky Sports. So I absolutely cannot wait for this card as well. Few fights to mention. Let's run through them. We've got the prospect from Puerto Rico, Mr. Xander Zayas. He is 15-0 with 10 KOs. He gets in with Ronald Cruz, who's 18-2 with a draw. Never been stopped, Ronald Cruz. That's over 8 rounds there. Can Zayas become the first man to stop him? We'll have to wait and see. Might be worth a little punt on him to win on points if the price is right. We're going to see Bruce Carrington, 7-0, get in with Luis Perozzo, who's 16-6. What else do we have? Robson Conceição, 17-2. He gets in with Nicholas Polanco, who's 20-4. That's over 10 rounds there. Polanco never been stopped, coming off 3 losses in a row. You'd have to favour Conceição heavily there. I remember, he got took apart by Shakur Stevenson in his last fight as well. Also on the card, I'm really excited to actually see this young man back. Jermaine Ortiz, 16-1 with a draw. His first fight back since losing to Vasyl Lomachenko back in October. Really happy to see him back in a ring. He gets in here with Humberto Galindo, who's 14-3 with a draw. I remember watching his last fight. He boxed Raymond Muratalla. He had Muratalla down in the first round, but ended up getting knocked out himself in round 9. It was quite a fun fight, though. It was a lot of, power shots just being thrown by both men. I'm expecting Ortiz to look good, though, against that style, to be honest. And another, I'd say, blue-chip prospect, as the Americans like to say, Henry Lebron, 17-0 with 10 KOs. He gets in with Carlos Ramos, who's 17-2. That's over 10 rounds as well. The only thing about Ramos, I remember him losing years ago to Jazza Dickens, friend of the show, so I don't think he's going to fare too well against Henry Lebron. And yeah, the main event, I'm going to come to you again, Eddie. Josh Taylor, 19-0, defending his WBO World Super Lightweight title against Teofimo Lopez, 18-1. Both guys coming off very controversial decision wins in their last fight. Sandor Martin, of course, dropped Teofimo Lopez. Lopez didn't look too good there, and a lot of people felt like he got a gift in Madison Square Garden. He's back, though, against Josh Taylor. Josh Taylor, like I say, everyone knows he lost that fight last time out to Jack Catterall, and he managed to get a gift decision. It was a year and 4 months ago now. And I tell you what, it's a great fight, obviously, it really is. Josh Taylor is a big, big favourite. I tell you what, though, I'm not entirely sure we're going to see 12 rounds. There's a really nice price for Teofimo Lopez to get the stoppage, and I know that might sound a bit crazy. Obviously, Taylor's probably the biggest guy that Teofimo would have been in with, and Teofimo, since moving up to 140, I mean, yeah, he got Pedro Camper out of there, but went 10 with Sandor Martin, arguably lost the fight. Hasn't really looked fantastic. It doesn't look like his old authentic self since, I guess, I don't know, 3 years ago. You've got to go right back to, I mean, the Lomachenko fight, he looked good, obviously. That was 2.5 years ago now. I mean, where does the time go? You know, other than that, you've got to go back to the Richard Commey fight, things like that. That's over 3 years ago now. 3.5 years ago since those times there where he was banging out people like Edis Tatley, Diego Magdaleno, wiping the floor with these guys. That's a long time ago now. I've got a feeling, though, that he might do it. I think my pick would probably be Teofimo. I've just got this feeling that he's going to do it. Obviously, the inactivity for Josh Taylor, I think, is going to work against him. 1 year and 4 months out the ring, away from home, I just have a feeling Teofimo is going to pull this off one way or another. But like I say, Taylor is the massive favourite. I'm going to come to you, Eddie. I don't know how much you've seen of Taylor, but it's a fantastic fight.
Oh, no, I saw Taylor in a couple of fights. I watched the video. And I also saw him in the fight with, it was a big fight. A big fight he had where he, I can't remember the guy, Ramirez.
Ramirez, yeah.
That was a good fight. It was a good test for him, too, and he ended up coming out winning. But, yeah, no, he's a fantastic fighter, though. He can box really well. He's smart, you know, intelligent. He knows what to do. IQ pretty high. I would have, you know, before...
Can I just interrupt? Sorry, Eddie, just with a statistic.
Oh, you got it.
A staggering statistic that I found. Josh Taylor's last 6 opponents... their combined records, none of them had lost a fight. 133-0, his last 6 opponents. 133-0.
That's got to be right up there with the toughest line. Oh, goodness gracious. That shows you he's fighting all top quality guys and going after them. So you got to give him credit there. But I was going to say, previous to... the fight with, well, after the Lomachenko fight we're talking about Lopez, right? After the Lomachenko fight, and before obviously seeing him lose to Cambosis and then have that tough with Sandra Martin, which it looked like he most likely would, you know, most people thought he lost. I would have said that, oh, Teofimo for sure. Like, if he would have done what we expected him to do against in those 2 fights, I would have said for sure Teofimo has a good shot at not only winning, but he might stop. You know what I mean? And that kind of, because he looked like, yo, this guy is really, really sharp. Sharp, heavy punching guy, a lot of confidence, speed, good ability, you know what I mean? Blah, blah, blah. He just looks the part when it comes to that. But then, you know, and then obviously not seeing much of Josh Taylor, but I've seen a lot of Josh Taylor. And besides the Jack Catterall fight, where it looks like, you know, most likely, obviously, he lost, but got the decision that happens in boxing. It's really hard to say that he would lose in this situation. Because it just, in the beginning, I would have said, like I said, Teofimo. Now I'm looking at it, and even though I know it's a good betting thing, and you know, Teofimo has, he's not looked great recently, and you expect that he's due to have a good performance now. I still look at what Josh Taylor can do, his range, his boxing ability, you know, southpaw style being really good with that southpaw style. And I'm looking at it, and it's hard for me to go against it. And I kind of understand to a degree why the bookies are putting him such a favorite. And like you said, looking at his previous opponent, he's been in tough every time out. And I'm not saying that Teofimo hasn't, but we're talking about guys with no losses, guys who are top guys that he's fighting for his life every time he steps in. I don't know. It's going to be, it would be hard for me to go against John Taylor in this one.
Yeah, and once again, I just think there's so many tangibles. I mean, yeah, Josh Taylor, he went on a heck of a run, you know, beat Victor Postol. Then he took the O away from Ryan Martin, who was a prospect fighting, with Abel Sanchez up in Big Bear, if I'm not mistaken, took his O. Then he went and took Ivan Baranchik's O. Then he went and took Regis Progre's O. Then he boxed a guy who wasn't very good from Thailand, took his O. Then he come and took Jose Ramirez's O on the road as well. You know, I'm forgetting he's been to America and taken an O. And then, yeah, by controversial fashion, he did take Jack Catterall's O last time out. Yeah, it's there's a lot of tangibles, and why I say that is because one of the biggest things that I haven't seen many people talk about recently is that Josh Taylor was apparently really struggling with the weight, and he didn't look good on the scales against Ramirez, but he won the fight even though it was close. He didn't look well. I don't think he looked too bad on the scales against Cattaro, actually. I'm pretty sure he said he did the weight the best he'd ever done it, but he blamed the weight afterwards on a poor performance, despite him still saying he felt he deserved it, and no one agreed apart from him and I think two of the judges. But anyways, he definitely lost that fight, and to see him still at the weight and he hasn't fought or had to make the weight in a year and 4 months, I think the weight, if he gets down to it, I think that's going to really hinder his performance. And that inactivity, I think Teofimo Lopez, again, hasn't looked too great since moving up. So that's a thing as well. Like, it's a weight that if they're both 100% healthy and fit at, it's a weight that, of course, all day long suits Taylor. But is he healthy and fit at this weight? And because he hasn't had to make it for such a long time, that's why I feel like the playing field is leveled out a little bit. And maybe 140 now has become actually a more comfortable weight for Teofimo to make because he's still kind of new to that weight. So there's a lot of things to look into. But definitely we can confidently say both guys were very lucky to win their last fight. And a lot of people felt that they got gift decisions respectively. And here we go. It's a great fight. Like I said, I've been looking forward to it for a long time. I think Teofimo has managed to get under the skin of Taylor, which isn't particularly a difficult thing to do. He gets rattled a lot, but then he kind of fights quite well, unless your name's Jack Catterall, in which he got under his skin and he didn't really fight very well. But yeah, I think it's going to be a good one. It's definitely the fight to watch, you know what I mean? Like, unfortunately, I'm not going to be watching the Munguia fight, even though I think potentially that could be the best fight of the weekend. But I'm just too invested in Teofimo Lopez against Josh Taylor, both guys, friends of the show. Got to be watching that one. And yeah, hopefully it is a cracker. But I think there's so many great fights to sink our teeth into this weekend, and I'm really looking forward to next week's show. It's going to be, of course, episode 400, and there's going to be so much to review, which is always going to take quite a bit of time, Eddie. So expect that next week. I think it's going to be a bit long in part one. But anyways, that brings the preview part to a close. I cannot wait to watch the boxing this weekend. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest, Shanika Johnson. All the best to her. In part two, we did the news. I've just wrapped up the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 399 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the reigning IBF Super Bantamweight World Champion, Miss Shanika Johnson. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. That's about everything, though, from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again next week.